All right. Dynamics review. Okay. Dynamics review probably should start with these laws that Mr. Newton came up with. What are they? How many are there? Let's start there. Three. We got three of them. What are they?
Object in motion will stay in motion unless acted upon.
Object in motion will stay in motion unless acted upon. How can I write that as an equation? How can I write that equation and or what's the rest of that law? F equals ma. That's going to be a different one, actually.
Conservation of momentum.
Conservation of momentum is a consequence of one of these. Yeah, there you go. Unless acted upon, right? So. If a system's not acted upon, what does that mean for the external forces? Yes. Some of the external forces are zero. We have constant velocity, whether it's zero or in motion, right? And note, these are vectors, and that's constant. So if we don't have any external forces, our velocity is going to be constant. Okay? Somebody said F equals ma. That's the second one. And note that they are vectors. What's the third one? Momentum is a consequence of this one. Conservation. Equal and opposite reactions. So I'm going to be a little bit more sloppy with my notation. So the force from 1 on 2 is equal to opposite the force of 2 on 1. And that one is colloquially equal but opposite. What does Newton's laws apply to? Any object. Everybody agree with that? Any object with mass. There's an M kind of implicitly in all of this. Sure. Motion, that's kind of describing motion, but there's actually a really, strictly speaking, I'm picking a little bit, what did Newton himself, what does Newton's laws apply to? Well, it's physics, he was a yeah, that's right. Classical objects, so yes, this is actually an approximation of the world, right? Every model you develop in your entire career is wrong, including Newton's.
Assuming constant acceleration.
Constant acceleration. Not really, no. Close. Newton doesn't describe rigid bodies at all. What does Newton describe?
Particles,
point masses. So strictly speaking, Newton, all he figured out was point masses, particles. There's no rotation in any of this, right? We can take these laws, however, and get to rotational information by considering bodies as collections of point masses. And that's where we get to Newton-Euler physics, Newton-Euler dynamics. Okay. So these are really simplified versions. This is a model of the universe. That turns out to be really, really good. But it's still wrong. Okay. And incomplete. Okay. So if we have a body, okay, let's draw a body that we'll see a lot of this semester. I have mass, M, on a frictionless surface. That's where our wheels are going to indicate here. Attached to ground with a spring, spring constant's K, and damper, damping coefficient C. Okay. How do I figure out what kind of forces are acting on that mass? The stretch of the spring, that's going to be one of them. How do I kind of map that out for free body diagram? Yes. There is a very high correlation between people that do well in the modeling part of vibration problems and those that draw free body diagrams. I'm going to advocate for always drawing a free body diagram, even if you're using Lagrange's method, which we'll get to pretty soon. So I have a mass there. What kind of forces are acting on it? We had one which said the stretch of the spring. What else do we have? Gravitational force on the mass. That's just mg, right? Normal force from the ground. My applied force. And I have some damper. Okay. Anything else? Friction. Well, I might. In this case, I've said, hey, these wheels are perfect and frictionless, and that's a frictionless surface. That's kind of what those wheels are indicating here. So really, what we're modeling here is kind of a point mass on a frictionless surface attached to ground with a spring and damper. Just kind of drawing it as a cart instead of a little point. So that means, hey, we can do some of this stuff to that guy. Okay. So I want to know the sum of the forces on this. I need to know the vector form of that. Okay. So how do I get that? Pick X and Y. Well, maybe. Okay. There's another thing. I'm going to be our kind of first two preliminary steps for any problem we're solving. Right? We're going to draw a free body diagram, and we're going to explicitly indicate what axes we're going to use to describe the motion of that system. In this case, it makes sense probably to have kind of standard Cartesian set of coordinates. Okay? It doesn't have to be that. We could have y pointing down. We could have positive x to the left. As long as we pick a right-hand system, everything will work out for us. All right. This one makes sense for this problem. Okay. So if I do pick that one, what are my forces in each of those directions? Let's just write that. Yep. And all that is in the x direction, right? Capital I's unit vector in that capital X direction. Okay. F's positive, the spring and damper, in this case, we've drawn them negative. Okay. And then what do I have in the Y direction, the vertical direction? Yep. Okay. There we go. There's some of our forces, which we know it's going to equal that. And we're marching towards having equations of motion already. Okay? We'll come back to that in a second. what I want to get, make sure we get to. Make sure I match my notes. I want to write the position of the endpoint of this kind of two-bar linkage. How can I do that? What I'm going to do, let's call that point M.
Okay.
And I'm going to call that guy O. And we'll call it O because it makes sense that we have some kind of frame here, probably, for this particular problem. Our notation. We're going to write the position of M with respect to point O. Position of M with respect to point O, R, M slash O. Okay. What is that? How do I get it?
The sum of the x distance and the y distance.
That's right. I can take the components in each case. As these linkages get more complex, I know that vectors just add, right? So I can write maybe the position from O to here. I don't think we have to do that. It's kind of a simple problem. But you can always add up those linkages. All right. That's kinematics, right? So in this case, that could be written as RP relative to O. That's true, right? That's what we just said. And this one's easy enough to look at and just look at kind of the sum in both the x and y direction. Ends up being that. Tracking those vectors, right? What's the velocity of that endpoint? Yeah, the total time derivative. That's the important part here. I'm going to take the total time derivative of that position vector. For us, for most of what we'll see, probably for most of what you've seen in your career thus far, that's just kind of taking the derivatives of these inside parts. Right. You go on, you take some advanced dynamics classes, you go to grad school maybe, come take dynamics with me, and these unit vectors actually can start changing directions too. So they would have derivatives that gets more complex. So in that context, just remember, you have to take the total time derivative. It's not just the derivative of these coefficients. In this case, it just happens that the derivative of these unit vectors is zero because they're constant. Okay. So, let's talk more about Newton now that we have some notation under our belts. I will do that here. Maybe. I think we have space. Okay. And actually, we're going to look at this guy over here. F equals ma. Well, really, notation for this book, yeah. It's really that, right? Where L is our linear momentum. I think that's important to remember as well. For the vast majority of systems we're going to model in this class, and maybe even all of them, m is constant, right? So you can pull this guy out, and ddt of v is acceleration. When do we have to be concerned and keep that m inside the total time derivative? Yeah, if m is changing with time, what kind of systems, for what kind of systems might m change with time? Rockets, a big one, right? You want to go work at SpaceX, Blue Origin, be comfortable with M changing a lot as your system moves. Dump truck that's leaking, a big ocean-going vessel that's burning fuel, where the fuel is a significant portion of the vessel weight itself. So M's not always constant, just kind of keeping that in mind. Why I wanted to do that. Okay. If we go beyond just what Mr. Newton said, we can start thinking about rotation. Rotation really comes into play when we're talking rigid bodies. Right. When we're talking rotation, what describes the motion of some body or some maybe even point mass in rotation about some place? We have some kind of sum of the moments. Okay. And if we're summing moments, we always have to pick where we're going to sum those moments about. And it turns out that's a critical choice when setting up rotational equations of motion. In the general case, A of A, right? In the full case, we have this. Okay. Generic, random, arbitrary selection of point A that we're going to sum moments about. Right. C is our center of mass location for the body we care about. We're trying to sum moments on. Okay, and then HA is our angular momentum. And all these things are vectors. You probably, or maybe, have just seen this equation without that. And most of the problems you worked in your career don't have that term associated with it. And that's because you've made a nice choice of what point A is, or someone did it for you when they were describing the problem to you. Okay. So if I have to choose, I want to get rid of this term. I'd like this equation to look like that, so that it looks like this. It's the rotational analog of it. Okay. Some of my forces, mass, and acceleration, or some of the forces is rate of change of linear momentum. Some of the moments about the point is the rate of change of the angular momentum. I'd like that to be the case, and be able to use that form of this equation. Well, what does that mean has to happen to that term? That's got to go to zero. Okay, so there's a few things we can do to make that term, right? We can make that go to zero by choosing A in a nice way. Okay? I'm going to say there are three primary ways. How can we make that cross product go to zero? Yeah, so if RCA is zero, so we're going to sum moments about the center of mass of my system, so that R, the distance between A and the center of mass, is zero for all time. That makes that cross product go away. I get the nice form of this equation. Away we go. Okay. How else can we get rid of that cross product? Zero acceleration. When does that happen? How can we choose that? What's the most common case you think of that happening? Contact point with the ground is actually a special case of what I'm looking for. Instantaneous sinner is actually a special case of what I'm looking for. Yeah, sure. Velocity is constant. That's the most common case is when that constant velocity is actually zero. Right? The rolling case is that, right? And all those examples you guys just gave were in pure rotation about point A. Right? You have a simple pinned pendulum. It's in pure rotation about its pin. It's in pure rotation about that point. So we can sum moments about that pin. Okay. What's the other way that cross product can go to zero? What's that?
Mass
is zero? Yeah, mass is zero. We got other problems, probably. Well, this cross product can still be zero even if the components are non-zero. How? Yeah, they're parallel. Right. So I'm always accelerating for all time directly away or towards the center of mass of the system. Okay. Let's eraser. No eraser. Those two are parallel. That third case we're not going to see so often here. We're going to work with one or two usually. Okay. You guys with me so far? Dynamics crash course. Okay. In that case, let's take our system here. We've already done a lot of the work. I'm going to get rid of this. Give us some space. All right. Let's look at this particular system in a little bit more detail. Let's actually get down to some equations of motion for it, maybe. All right. We said, hey, there's this spring force. What is it? Here, kx, maybe, in this case, I think that's probably a good choice. What is it in the general case? K, spring constant. I'm going to put a delta. Where delta is the spring's displacement from its equilibrium length. So in this case, we might say, and kind of how I've drawn it, that hey, x is actually, if I'm the system's just sitting there and not moving at time zero, then the spring is probably in some kind of equilibrium state. It's not stretched, compressed, or stretched. So I can say, well, I'm going to measure the motion of the mass from that equilibrium. And that's quite often what we're going to do for the rest of the semester. We're going to look at vibration about some kind of equilibrium condition most of the time. Okay. So in this case, I might say, hey, the force of the spring in this case is kx. Okay. It's the force of the damper. Viscous damping. 1 second. This actually, make a note, this is an approximation of that spring force. It's a linear approximation of that spring force. This guy Hooke came up with it, right? Can a real spring stretch forever and still have a force proportional to how far it's stretched? No, it can't. A real string, right? A real spring. This is a linear approximation within some region of operation. Every model you make in your entire life is wrong. Just get used to it. All right. So one of the most popular models is this. Right. You get close to being stretched to the maximum in either case, right, compressed or negative, that force increases. Hooke's law says it's just linear. So in some small region, it is pretty close to linear. Over the entire operating regime, it's not at all. Okay. So let's look at viscous damping. Let's say that's a viscous, pure, viscous, linear damper. Ideal damper there. What's its force? C is going to show up somewhere. Good guess. Nice job. Yeah, it's the velocity. And in the general case, it's kind of rate of change of its displacement. And then in this particular case, it's Cx dot. Okay, so we filled out kind of our motion in the I direction. We know everything kind of in that J direction already. So let's take a look at this. Well, that guy's going to equal, how can I write that acceleration? Yeah, I can write the acceleration each in kind of component wise as well in each direction. So I could write this. If I go ahead and distribute that mass into both terms. And then really, my one vector equation becomes two scalar equations, right? So I have go. Equation of motion for this particular system. As we've looked at this problem, or as we're looking at this problem, are we allowing any motion in the y direction? No, right? So what happens? That guy's zero, right? So what that tells us is that, hey, that normal force has to equal n equals mg. And that doesn't really affect us here because the two directions are decoupled, given the system we have. Motion in the x direction is not affecting motion in the y direction at all. Those guys are decoupled. So I have that I direction equation. I'll group the terms more like what we'll see them throughout the remainder of the semester. There we have. Equation of motion for a direct force mass spring damper system. You're going to get tired of seeing that, probably. Okay. So that describes a second order ordinary linear differential equation. Okay. I want to know, how does x move? That's what I'm trying to figure out generally, right? I have all these forces acting on that body. How those forces cause it to move? How do I get from this linear second order ordinary differential equation to what the heck the mass is doing? Anybody? I want to go from that to that. What do I need to do? Calculus? Yeah? Some of that here. I have to solve the differential equation, right? It's math 350. Okay? What that's going to give me is what we'll call the time response of x. How x changes as a function of time. Okay. And that's where our focus will be for the first couple weeks. Or at least the first, this week and next, I guess that's maybe a couple. First 10 days, first 3 or 4 lectures. We'll also get into frequency responses. Frequency response will tell us how does the magnitude of the X motion change as the frequency of my input changes. So kind of work on keeping those separate. Right? Time response is a function of time, it's the time response. How does it move as time progresses? Okay. We got time to set up one more, I think. Okay, I have a rotational system here. So I have a pure pen over here, massless, inextensible length of length L with a point mass M at its end. Okay, I want to know how this thing moves. Where do I start? Free body diagram, yes, good job. And let's assume that it's kind of rotating horizontally so we don't have to worry about gravity. Right? It's stuck in one plane. So I have this free body diagram. What kind of forces do I have acting on the system? Tension, that's true, yes. What we're going to do is say, hey, all that, if this is a massless, inextensible rod, what does that tell us about kind of its internal tension? Yeah, it doesn't matter, right? The reactions here, if this is massless, inextensible, any reactions here at the pen are just like they're acting on M. But we do have reactions at the pen, right? So we might have, and we won't name those right now, a couple reactions there at the pen. What else do we have? The applied force, obviously, right? Okay. What's the next step, maybe you've learned already, that we should think about when we're trying to model this system? Yeah, explicitly identify what frames we're going to use to describe this. Okay. These simple problems, you can kind of get by without it. As problems get more complex, it gets harder to just reason it out, right? Furthermore, if you're doing this professionally, you might work a problem, working on a project for 6 months, and 6 months from now, I look back to my notes, and you're not going to be able to figure out what the hell you did. Okay, so leave yourself good notes. All right? So I'm going to pick a frame. What's a good spot here to pick to define my frame? What kind of frame is a makes sense for the system? Some kind of thing about the pen, right? I heard a few of you at least suggesting in this direction. Maybe something like that makes sense here. Where maybe the origin of that frame we'll call O. Okay. So in this case, a rotational problem, we define some frames. What's next? We need some moments. Built into some moments is a choice. Where are we going to sum moments about? Why O?
Because it cancels out the...
Yeah, it was here, yeah, right? Here. We're in pure rotation about point O. Acceleration of O is zero. Let's sum moments about point O. All right, what are the moments about point O? What do we got? How do we get to that? This is never going to lead you astray. That cross product will give it to you. You probably did this kind of moment calculations by drawing some triangles here, figuring out what component of the force was acting perpendicular to the direction of rotation, those kind of things. That perpendicular part is just the result of that. Okay? drawing these triangles and things can help you kind of maybe develop some intuition about what's happening. You should think about that. They're going to make it really hard to get the math right as the complexity of the problems we're solving gets higher. If the problem gets more complex, figuring out those triangles gets harder. Doing a cross product is the same difficulty all the time. Okay. So it's the displacement vector to the point of application from where you're summing moments about, right? That's what that is. Position of M relative to point O. And then the forces that are acting there, right? If I had forces kind of halfway down, right, I would have to do this R cross with that F, right? Or forces this way. I got to get the direction right. But that R cross F is never going to lead you astray. Okay. And is also valid in 3D. That's the other place where these kind of drawing the triangles and kind of figuring it out just by inspection, by geometry, starts to really break down. Is once you break out of the planar world. Right. So what is our position of M with respect to O? Yeah, so we gotta define some kind of angle. Let's call, match my notes. Makes sense, of course. That's theta. Right, we have what L so what's our moments then? Well, J cross J is 0, I cross J is K. Just that. Does that make sense? Physically. Remember, we're describing a physical thing here, so always ask yourself, does this make sense physically for the system we're describing? I hear some yeses. Why yes? What checks do we have? Yeah, so we have, hey, all that rotation has to be in the K direction, right? It has to stay in this plane. We're talking about a plane of problem. So we better have all our moments acting in K. That's a good check. We're in the right direction at least. How about the negative sign? Negative sign makes sense? Yeah, because it's forcing it down. It's forcing theta to be smaller. That's a pretty good check. We got this right. Right. If you want to think about kind of force time, hey, the lever arm is kind of L. That's where you're kind of triangle, right? That's F cosine theta. Right? Times the lever arm L. So it makes sense there too. So we'll be taking these checks throughout. Right? We're describing physical systems. We should be able to look at it and say, okay, yeah, that makes sense. It would move like that if it was sitting here on the table. Okay? I think we're out of time. I will see you guys on Tuesday. And I'll email the class list to let you know about these lecture notes when they go up.